This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasen with Noah Lim and Kusi Chuang in the studio this morning. In about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Azrul Mohammad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policies, to discuss the effectiveness of the RMCO protocols. But right now, let's talk about the markets in the US. Markets whipsawed as all attention was on the FOMC meeting. The Dow closed down 1%. The S&P 500 closed down 0.5%. But the NASDAQ closed up in the green, 0.7% there. Noel, what about Asia?
Yeah, Asia was rather mixed. The Shanghai Composite ended down 0.4%. The Hang Seng was marginally down by 0.03%. The Nikkei 225 and STI, I think they closed up about 0.2%. And the FBM also, KLCI, was up 0.01%.
So just barely in the green, 0.01% there. Now, for more on global markets, we speak to Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence. Tony, are you there on the line with us?
Yes, sir. Morning.
Good morning to you. Now, the FOMC left interest rates unchanged after their meeting, pledging to continue with quantitative easing till 2022. What does this tell you about the state of the economy there?
Well, it's the Fed's really just trying to create stability. So, we see them, like you said, the next 3 years, they'll keep them the same. We think that they'll just reinforce some of the policies they've already put in place. One of the areas we see them focusing on is on yield curve control. Although that's not explicit, we really see that as an area that they're moving in to encourage capital investment. We've really seen capital investment fall here in the States, especially since the COVID time. Oil and gas companies have trimmed, billions of dollars of a capital investment, for example. So if they can have low cost borrowing through yield curve control, it could help that.
What are the implications of doing this yield curve control, like, for example, on gold?
On gold, well, the environment generally with both QE, which is meant to provide liquidity, and yield curve control, which is meant to provide low interest rates, what that does is it really pushes the dollar down. And there is, although it's not perfectly inverse, there is generally an inverse relationship between the dollar and gold. So if it's intended to push the value of the dollar down, one would expect gold to rise.
Yeah, Tony, yield curve control can also be called money printing, which has been happening for the last 10, 12 years. From an evidential standpoint, have corporations actually spent some of that excess cash on capital reinvestment, or have they done it in terms of paying back dividends to themselves and their shareholders, or even worse, share buybacks?
Oh, it's mostly share buybacks, but share buybacks and dividends, one could argue, are similar. It's just a different form of paying back shareholders. So share buybacks have really been made to be evil over the last, say, 5-10 years or something. But it's really similar to a dividend in that it brings value to the investors themselves. So is it a good thing? I don't necessarily think so, but it is just one form of getting money back to investors. It's not necessarily helping capital investment. It hasn't necessarily helped capital investment. And so, looking at things like yield curve control, what we've seen is a lot of QE, but we haven't seen as much yield curve control. So yield curve control could be one way to provide more incentive for CapEx.
Well, that hasn't happened clearly. And to what extent do you think that policy has exacerbated the wealth inequality in the country and in the United States, which some say has manifested themselves in some of these demonstrations you see all over the country?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a very complicated question, and we can spend a lot of time on it. So I think whether yield curve control has done that, I can't necessarily argue for or against it. Has QE done that? Oh, surely. I mean, QE has definitely contributed to inequality. It's definitely contributed more to capital concentration itself than overall inequality. Capital is concentrated with the investment class rather than, say, the working class although that sounds very Marxist. I didn't really mean it to sound that way, but it's really helped to concentrate capital.
Well, Tony, let's take a look at last night. The U.S. markets were mixed overnight. Is this a reality check that the recovery may not be as soon or as sharp as anticipated by investors?
You know, I think the kind of the relief rally we've seen over the past few weeks has really been one of really just excitement that COVID is ending and really hopeful that things will open, as well as recognition of the Fed's activity and the Treasury's activity of getting trillions of dollars into the economy. As investors realize how slow those openings are going to be and the impact that it will have on, of course, Q2 earnings, but potentially Q3 earnings, I think we'll see some of this enthusiasm fall away. So markets are trying to find that level. What is that level? And because there's so much uncertainty, we don't really know that level. So so this is why, you know, we've expected volatility through Q2 and into Q3 until there's more clarity about the pace of opening, how that'll affect different industries, and the severity of, say, a second wave, and to be honest, whether people really care about the second wave.
Well, NASDAQ has passed 10,000 and valuation is at the highest in, I think, the last 15 years. Where do you think tech stocks will go from here?
You know, I think it really all depends on how companies focus on things like productivity. You know, if we continue to see layoffs and unemployment, companies may decide to invest in technology. So we may see some real broad-based investment in productivity like we did, you know, 25 to 20 years ago when companies really started to invest in computing and internet and, you know, all these other productivity tools. It's quite possible that we see that across large companies. So, you know, it's really questionable. Have we expanded valuations as far as we can, or is there further expansion there?
Tony, just following up on that, well, we've seen the market recover in the US, but there's definitely a divergence between how the tech stocks have performed and how the larger S&P 500 has performed. Do you think there's a lot more room for tech stocks? Do you think these two indexes are essentially going to diverge at this point?
We may see a little bit of divergence, but I don't see that much divergence. I think there is a lot of synchronization within those indexes. So we may see a bit like we saw today, but I don't think that will continue in a massive way.
So when you mean synchronization, you mean that they will track each other in a parallel, but there is a gap between something like the NY FANG index and the S&P in general.
Of course.
Is that just due to the S&P just being weighted down by other classes of assets there?
Sure, yeah. It's, it's looking at traditional businesses that have, you know, physical assets and a lot of legacy employees and retirement commitments. You know, these sorts of things really weigh down old traditional businesses. And so the FANGs, for example, they don't have the huge retirement commitments that, say, a large manufacturer that's maybe 100 years old has. So as those things play through, and this really has to do with kind of the aging of baby boomers, really, those retirement commitments will age with them, and then they'll phase out eventually. But a lot of this is around, again, those companies are not as efficient as they could be. And until they get the level of efficiency that they need, we're going to see a drag on their earnings. So, of course, with guys like the FANGs, since they have kind of virtual software related businesses, they will have valuations that are much more generous than traditional, say, S&P 500 businesses.
All right, Tony, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence there. I think just ending on that point is how this divergence between traditional industries and tech industries have been even more highlighted by what we've seen.
Yeah, I think it's really quite concerning because the alternative point of view is that the Fed's money printing policy, which has really accelerated exponentially in the last 3 months, there really is no indication from Jane Powell that he has an exit strategy in mind, right? Or has any exit strategy at all, because how do you unwind this much basically dopamine in the markets without having some kind of pain? And it's very clear, I mean, even though he was quite tempered in his response, this inequality has been really exacerbated in the last 10 years, right? This 1%.
Right, and on that note, we're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Azra Mohammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy, to discuss the effectiveness of RMCO protocols. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.